Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Panel. I'm back in the first hour. All right, now that the campaign's over, doing both hours on Friday as usual. Jake Huger, John Iadarola, Mondale Robinson. Mondale's on Rebel headquarters. You're checking that out. You're loving it. He's the mayor of Enfield, North Carolina. You're all stopping by and saying, well, it's not a big deal. I know the mayor around these parts. Mm-hmm. Those things are happening. Tourism in Enfield is exploding as we speak. We know these things. Everybody's watching the damage report, which is John's show. That is actually happening. But it would be kind of cool if Enfield tourism doubled. That would be pretty neat. One day. You know, there's a spot they could see, Mondale, right? They could see the place where you took down the Confederate statue. That's a landmark, okay?
We should talk to the National Park Service about that.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe turn it into something. Well, I already thought it was positive, but even more positive. Get some tourism up in there. All right, anyways, guys, huge hour for you guys. Obviously, you've got some tragic news. But then later in the program, Alex Jones promises to eat our ass. And he actually said it. Well, you'll see later in the program. Yeah. Anyways, and then you got Aaron Rodgers. You got a lot of fun stuff too.
Yeah.
But we start with serious stuff.
I wish I was on the second hour because, you know, we are a very divided people. We're very partisan. We're very tribal. I think it's a great show of unity that he'll cross party aisles to eat our leftist asses. I do think that that's how America comes together. Thank you, Alex Jones. Anyway, I can't wait to hear your commentary on that, considering your history with him. In any event, we're going to move on to slightly more serious news to start things off. Special Prosecutor Nathan Wade has announced his resignation from the Donald Trump Fulton County election subversion case. We're going to get into the events that led to this and the criticism from the judge of the AG in a little bit. But first, we do want to show you the letter that was sent to Fannie Willis announcing that he'd be resigning. You can see it there, and we'll read just a little bit of what he said in announcing it. I am offering my resignation in the interest of democracy and dedication to the American public and to move the case forward as quickly as possible. Now, Nathan Wade taking himself off of this case, resigning, means that Fannie Willis will go forward in the case. A new lead prosecutor will need to either be hired or appointed from within her team of lawyers. And so that's how they're responding to the developments that we will go into great detail on. We also wanted to give you the response of the main target of this investigation, Donald Trump, facing a half dozen counts in regards to his attempt to overturn the results of that election. He talked about Nathan Wade resigning by saying this: the Fannie Willis lover, Mr. Nathan Wade Esquire, nice of him to give him the title, has just resigned in disgrace as per his inherent reading of the judge's order today. Nathan was the special, in more ways than one, prosecutor engaged by Fannie, pronounced Fawny Willis, I guess. Why is he clarifying that. We'll get into it. There are reasons. They're racist. To persecute Trump for Gregor Joe Biden is DO injustice for purposes of election interference and living the life of the rich and famous. What is going on with him today? This is the equivalent of deranged Jack Smith getting canned. Big stuff. Something which should happen in the not too distant future. Okay, so he's the lover, and he was special in more ways than one, or whatever. It's a former president of the United States, and he's talking about how her name is pronounced. And it's not lost on me that Alina Haba also had weird things to say about the pronunciation of her name on the news earlier this week. And they're prosecuting him for election interference and for living the life of the rich and famous. Like, you didn't call Brad Raffensperger and try to get him to make up 11,000 votes because you were living large or had a nice mansion. What are you talking about? So, look, I honestly don't know. They're somewhat rhetorical questions. Cenk, what do you think about this development and Trump's reaction?
Yeah. So first of all, the more important stuff is what actually happened in regards to the case. And yeah, I agree with the judge on all counts. Fani Willis took a ridiculous risk in doing this. And he even questioned whether, you know, you should believe her. But overall, the case goes on. That's the most important thing, because the case has nothing to do with the relationship of Willis and Wade. That, you know, that's a different problem, in my opinion, for the people of Fulton County to deal with. You know, directing some public money towards a boyfriend, if that's what happened, etc. But in terms of whether that affects Donald, whether Donald Trump did it or not. No, that doesn't affect the case at all. And the judge said it, the case goes on, doesn't affect it. Wade's gotta go, he does, etc. In terms of Trump's reaction, I mean, the buffoon's gonna buffoon, right? So that he was always gonna say something stupid. And if he's trying to make Fani sound like phony, why not just write phony instead of F-A-U-N-I? Who knows? Who knows what's going on inside his very empty mind? I mainly picture a game of Pong, where his one brain cell keeps bouncing from ba-ding, ba-ding, ba-ding.
Those are, right? Like sound effects he makes.
Yeah, that's right.
Bing bong.
And so, and he says it's gonna happen to Jack Smith next. No, it's not. He's just making stuff up. He's never said anything true in his life. So his reaction is the usual juvenile stuff. I'm not surprised by that. But mainly, I don't really care what happens to Fani Willis and her career. Who knows what's gonna happen from here? I can speculate later. What I care about is the case, and the case survives, other than the counts that were dismissed. We can get into that too. But Mondale, I'm curious what you think.
Yeah, I mean, that's important, that point right there, Cenk. Like, the fact that the case is still on, Trump is still on trial for trying to steal an election, right? And he's talking about disgraced and all of the things he had to say about the attorney that stepped down, her lover. It's hilarious to me that he finds this disgraceful, but not him trying to lose, I mean, steal an election that he lost. Not that he has been, you know, found liable for rape. That's not disgraceful. And what this judge did do was give too much wind, 2 months too long for a motion that he didn't believe was grounded in reality or facts, right? So the problem is, when he talked about the appearance of impropriety or appearance of anything, it just gives wind to the Trump argument. And I think all of those people, because if we really cared about appearance, then Trump would not be the Republican nominee. So they don't care about appearance. And the same people that was praising his judge for dropping 3 charges, this day today in history, they began to talk trash about him and call him a leftist and said he was a plant, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because of the appearance is the only reason. The judge himself said there was no conflict of interest that prevented this case from happening in this county by this DA. The sad part for Trump is he's too blinded by what he thinks is a victory of what's about to happen to him. He's just unleashed all of the fear. And the worst thing can happen to him is if Fani Willis does take over this case as lead prosecutor herself, because she's gonna be a ninja in that court at him.
Yeah. Yeah, this whole thing's so utterly pointless. Like, if you're a MAGA person, you should be so mad at Trump for all of this. I don't mean because he tried to overturn the results of an election. I know that you don't care about democracy or whatever, but that he did all of this so pointlessly. Like, think about all of the different legal challenges that he's facing, the criminal cases that are coming forward. Like, he has this Georgia case. Even if he had succeeded in getting Brad Raffensperger to find him the 11,000 votes, He needed to flip like three other states. It wasn't gonna happen. This is all pointless. Storming the Capitol on January 6th, Mike Pence can't save you, buddy. It was pointless, and that's another trial. Paying off Stormy Daniels, everybody already knows that you're a horrible, horrible person. That was probably wasted money. Melania is under no illusions as to who you are. That was pointless. The stealing of the classified documents, what did he gain from that? It's not even like he achieved his most subversive, dishonest goals by committing these crimes. He accomplished nothing by committing these crimes except guaranteeing that he'd spend years facing legal challenges. They're gonna be a major distraction and waste of money during an election year. And along the way, the needless constant mockery of the names of black women. They cannot pass up an opportunity, whether it's him or Alina Habba or Tucker Carlson with Kamala Harris. Like, I love that they continually complain about being called racist, and they can't even, they're not even satisfied to just have the massive wide scale systemic racism that they baked into our country and our economy. They have to have the petty little conversational bigotry too. Utterly stupid. But as you said, you know, what's actually being discussed here, the more important part, and we will turn to that now. Let's rewind from the breaking news to how we got here. Earlier this morning, Georgia Superior Court Judge Scott McAfee ruled that Fani Willis can remain in charge of the racketeering case against Donald Trump and his nearly 20 co-conspirators on one condition, a condition that has since been met with Special Prosecutor Nathan Wade resigning from the case. So he wrote in his ruling that the court finds the allegations and evidence legally insufficient to support a finding of an actual conflict of interest. That's the most important headline version of this that most people have already breezed past, and they're much more interested in the stuff that we're gonna be discussing later. However, the appearance of impropriety remains and must be handled as previously outlined before the prosecution can proceed. So that was the requiring that either she or he, Nathan Wade, resign from the case. So they find that the evidence did not establish the DA's receipt of a material financial benefit as a result of her decision to hire and engage in a romantic relationship with Wade. That was one of the main allegations, that they were taking the money or that she was getting the money back from him. He's saying there's not actually evidence of that. But the evidence demonstrated that the financial gain flowing from a relationship with Wade was not a motivating factor on the part of the DA to indict and prosecute this case. No reasonable person ever thought that it was, but it was a Hail Mary attempt by the Trump legal team to make this entire thing disappear. So in addition to that, look, there were a lot of criticisms. We could read through a lot of it. We're just gonna go to sort of a mashup of some of the most forceful criticisms right here.
And these are all verbatim from the opinion. First of all, there's a quote, significant appearance of impropriety that infects the prosecution team. Second, a tremendous lack in judgment. Third, the unprofessional manner of the DA's testimony. Fourth, the odor of mendacity remains. I Googled mendacity, it means lying.
Fifth, already new order. That's
right. Fifth, the legally improper speech that was made in the church that Laura just talked about, legally improper with the effect to cast racial aspersions on the defendants. Sixth, the DA has created dangerous waters for the DA to wade further into. And finally, and I think this is the most damning, there are reasonable questions about whether the DA testified untruthfully.
So covering a lot of ground there, Cenk, I wanna start with you. What do you make of the criticisms from the judge?
Look, it's impossible for me to know because I didn't watch all the testimony, and Fani Willis and Wade forcefully denied what had happened. But the testimony of her friend, who said that they actually were in the relationship for 2 years before she hired him for this job, was devastating. And so at the end of the day, I come out probably exactly where the judge is, which is I don't know that they proved a conflict of interest beyond a reasonable doubt, but it definitely has the appearance of impropriety. And guys, remember, this is the impropriety about the taxpayers' money being spent on her boyfriend, if that's the case, as she hires him for this job, right? Again, it has nothing to do with the heart of the case of Donald Trump. That would be prosecuted under any prosecutor and has nothing to do with the relationship. But But that's what it looked like to me, you know, to the best of my ability to discern it. And I probably would have ruled the same exact way that the judge did. I don't know if you guys disagree. Mondo, what do you think?
I think it's a trash statement. All seven of those reasons by the judge does not speak to the motion. The motion was about a conflict of interest as it pertains to being able to preside over this case. And the judge absolutely exonerated the district attorney office in that manner. The rest of this is just hyperbole. It's just him speaking about, well, not hyperbole, just junk. Him speaking about things that he has no jurisdiction over. I think, and that to me is the problem with all of this. That to me is the continuation of trying to sexualize these black people who were doing what two consenting adults decided to do. As it pertains to this case and issues of proprietary or improprietary actions, I really don't see how her relationship or her hiring this person, this man, to be her special counsel for a cheeseburger, for a vacation, is absolutely ridiculous to me. And anybody that think it has anything to do with other than stalling this case did not pay attention to the fact that the judge had this ruling over a week ago already signed and just sat on it. Him playing politics in his own self, in his own mind. And that to me is dastardly. That is what we're not talking about. This is the success of the BS that is Trump. Him, his ability to muddy the water when it's not even necessary. We wasted 2 months to do exactly what Trump wanted to do. Take attention off for him and this case, because he's still under a RICO charges in Georgia. Let's just say that. Let's also say that in any other normal circumstances, people on the RICO would not be walking around here freely. There's another RICO case that this attorney brought against a group of rappers, a rap label, and she called them a gang, a criminal gang or enterprise, and none of them are walking free unless they cooperated with her. So the idea that Trump is suffering somehow because of Fannie Willis and her relationship with this counselor is absolutely ridiculous to me. And it is a nothing burger. Nothing. And I say that because if we sit back and watch it, what this case is about, America's democracy, and someone literally making and planning on all different levels on how to steal the election. Why are we spending 2 months on a motion when most motions last about 30, 40 minutes?
Yeah, I have the same frustration. In terms of what the judge said, I feel like I'm in a weird position where kind of between the two, where I don't necessarily disagree with any of it. I would just question why it needs to be such a significant part of what the judge put out. It feels like of a kind to the Hur report, where it's like, you didn't commit a crime, we're not gonna investigate you, but what could we do here that makes you look bad? Now, this doesn't seem as inherently dishonest as apparently a lot of the Hur report stuff was, we eventually found out. But it feels similar and more important than that, because you know, like that gets to her career. She's an individual, she's gonna do what she's gonna do. Everything seems to be lining up that it all suspiciously delivers the delays that Donald Trump is asking for. The hush money trial was just delayed for another month, because they need time to look over documentation. Eileen Cannon is getting involved in delaying things. The Supreme Court like cartoonishly delayed the most important trial. And so whether it's like a Trump appointed judge or not, everything seems to be like, well, you know, he doesn't really have anything to his argument, but maybe if we just give another month, maybe like two more months. When honestly, the case I made on the damage report, and this is the last thing I'll say, is Donald Trump says, I cannot be wasting my time when I should be campaigning with all of this stuff. This is election interference because it takes my time away. But the funny thing about that is he's already locked up the Republican nomination, and the RNC is not for multiple months. This is the perfect time to get all the trials out of the way. Prove your innocence, and then before the general election even formally begins, you could be back on the campaign trail unencumbered by these trials. Instead, they're delaying everything until around the time, if not later, that the RNC would happen. It's gonna obviously be a bigger obstacle to him campaigning, but directly as a result of the advocacy of him and his legal team.
Yeah, so I'll say the last couple of things for me. Look, I do have a disagreement here, which is I think that all this stuff is irrelevant to the Trump trial, other than the delay, which I'm gonna get to next. But I don't think it's irrelevant overall. If she was going out with him before she made the decision to hire him, and then she hired him, whether he took her on vacations and she got a burger or she didn't, you can't hire your boyfriend to do the most important trial of your life with taxpayer money. You just can't. That's just It's just nuts. I'm sorry. It's a terrible idea. So I agree with the judge on that. I agree with you guys that he might have been gratuitous with seven different attacks against her. And John makes a good point about how it reminds him of Robert Hur. Like, well, okay, technically I'm ruling with her, but I gotta, you know, make sure that I say enough bad things so I seem balanced at a minimum, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now, having said that, one of our viewers, I think, actually made the best point. It's actually one of our members in the member section, tyt.com/join. Do the show with us. And when you make great points, we share it with everybody, or hit the join button below if you're on YouTube. Bloated Ego wrote in, the win is the delay. Now I know a president can't pardon himself from a state crime, but he probably has a better chance of being elected if the trial is after the election. If he is convicted after the election, it would probably be easier to skirt the punishment as a sitting president. Yeah. That is exactly right. That's why I love having such a smart audience. And so to me, the number one culprit here is no one we've mentioned so far, other than Fani Willis in a sense in this case too, which is all of the prosecutors that waited 2.5 years before charging Donald Trump. Why did you guys wait? It's irrational, it's maddening. Yeah, I said from day one, charge him. He did a coup against America, and Merrick Garland sat on his hands for 2.5 years because Donald Trump is one of the elites, and he was worried, oh, we're gonna set a bad precedent if we prosecute Donald Trump. Maybe they'll prosecute one of us next. So he didn't do anything. And yes, both the prosecutor in New York, Alvin Bragg, and Fani Willis in Fulton County, they also waited too long, way, way, way too long. And now, of course, trials take forever. If you don't know that, sorry, you're not a very good prosecutor. Oh, golly gee, we ran into a delay. Oh, you don't say. Oh, nobody could have seen that coming. It's only a legal case that runs into delays all the time. Did you think the other side wasn't gonna present any evidence or any case? Actually, it was Trump. There's an excellent chance they were gonna present any evidence. But they were gonna try something. And so they got this, because they're gonna throw the kitchen sink at it. Should have started earlier instead of trying to protect the elites 24/7. So I am pretty livid about that.
Yeah, I mean, and you have every right to be livid about when these cases started. We should also acknowledge that, you know, putting together a RICO charge is not an easy thing. I mean, and we watched it happen with a lot of the mobsters when Rudy Giuliani had a brain. Well, what we're learning, and we should have actually probably known this anyway, was he wasn't the lead architect of those trials. He just took credit for them. So anyway, Here's what I think about all of this. We're about to watch lightning speed prosecution towards Trump, and I think Fannie Willis is gonna make a absolutely ass of every attorney that's defending one of those defendants, and it's gonna be her job, because what people forget is she's a thorough prosecutor. Would I have appointed my spouse to be the lead attorney? Probably not. But she also tried to get other people that turned her down, very notable people. So and what I'm not willing to do is let this judge, who happens to be a Federalist, just like her was, who happens to be a lifelong Republican, just like her was and is, I don't think that they know that they are just being, even killed in these cases. I do blame Fannie for putting herself in this position. I hear you on that, Jenk. But like I said, there have been other situations we've seen since cases have been arising against Trump where attorneys, district attorneys, didn't go through this. We literally watched Florida move a case to a space where Trump appointed a judge that was extremely friendly for him. And I think, you know, we're watching these double expectations and going along with them as if they're normal. So Fannie has a role in this, but also let's not let off the legal system that's playing to Trump's card.
Yeah. All right. So we got to take a break here, guys. When we come back, we do have the unfortunately deadly serious story yet again in Gaza, another massacre by a food truck. But later in the program, Ted Cruz is weeping, and you will have joy over that for an ironic reason. Down goes Pornhub, specifically in the state of Texas. We'll give you the details. All right. Anyway, I'll save more dad jokes for later. All right. We'll be back. All right, back on the show. Cenk, John, Armando with you guys. Daniel W just joined, and David McGurran just did. They hit the join button below. We appreciate you. And Aussie Budgie Smuggler upgraded. And you could also do that through the join button, and we love that too. That's huge help to the show. We appreciate all you guys. If you're watching elsewhere, which a lot of you are, tyt.com/join. You just type it into your cell phone like this, like my dad would do. And then take a look at it later, see if you'd like to join or contribute or anything to help us through these tough times. All right, John.
Yes. Okay, let's talk about some more tough times. Gaza's health ministry says that at least 20 people were killed and over 155 were injured by Israeli shelling as they were waiting for delivery of food at an area where food trucks often congregate. Now, the Israeli government denies these claims, and we're going to get to their statements. But bear in mind that those numbers are, of course, preliminary. Victims are still being moved from the site of the massacre to hospitals in the area, and it's expected that they could move up. And also, while we're talking about the different explanations for this, and you're, you know, absorbing the fact that so many people have died just waiting for food, bear in mind that at least 500,000 people are on the brink of famine in Gaza. A famine that we've been talking about on the show for several weeks. Very, very little aid or food has gotten in the meantime, meaning that the situation, which was already devastating, is growing worse with every passing day. Now, blame for the massacre and for the deaths depends on who you ask. The IDF said that a preliminary review found that Israeli forces, quote, did not open fire at the aid convoy in Kuwait Square, instead claiming that, quote, armed Palestinians opened fire while Gazan civilians were awaiting the arrival of the aid convoy. As aid trucks were entering, they continued to shoot as the crowd of Gazans began looting the trucks. Additionally, a number of Gazan civilians were run over by the trucks. Of course, this calls to mind the flower massacre of not too many weeks ago. Now, that's what the IDF says. The Ministry of Health in Gaza described the attack as a premeditated massacre. They said the incident was a result of the Israeli occupation forces targeting a gathering of citizens waiting for humanitarian aid to satisfy their thirst at the Kuwaiti roundabout in Gaza. Many of those who experienced the attack are giving interviews about the experience. One individual who went to Al-Shifa Hospital said, "We were sitting there and there was nothing. Suddenly they bombarded us with shells. There are a lot of martyrs and injuries. We were there to bring food for our children." And to add some context to this, this particular location where the attack happened, the Kuwaiti roundabout, was the site of this massacre yesterday. It was also the site of a very similar massacre the day before that. And for the same reason, it's a common place for the trucks to gather. It's a place where you can expect that food might be delivered. And so Wednesday, 7 people were killed, 86 injured. Today, several times that. And I just want you to think about the fact that on Wednesday, people were so desperate for food that they went to a place, sort of a similar sort of site to where the flower massacre happened, and many people died as a result. And then one day later, people went to that same place for food, because what else are they supposed to do? You went to a place where people were just massacred. There's blood on the streets already, and there's a worse massacre. And then I want you to ask yourself the question, what are people gonna do tomorrow? Are they not gonna go to the same place? I mean, they know that people are being massacred every day that they go there, but what are you supposed to do? You're starving, your family is starving, they've been starving for weeks. You know there's a good chance that you could die or be shot or shelled if you go there, and yet many will do that. Apparently, according to the government media office in Gaza, at least 400 people have been killed just in incidents like this. Gatherings of civilians trying to get aid. And honestly, we have to put it in the context of the larger conflict. This sort of thing happening in another conflict would almost stand out more, because you'd have, you know, people dying as a result of the war, and then innocent civilians being killed. But we also have to bear in mind that civilians are dying at a far faster rate than basically any world conflict for many years. The killing of civilians is already so utterly indiscriminate that I honestly, I think that we have to bear that in mind in terms of how we, you know, attribute blame, but also understand the people that are going to these places. The death of civilians is just such a constant, whether you stay at home, whether you go for aid, that it's difficult to even conceive of how you live in those circumstances.
Yeah.
Apologies. What do you think?
So, first of all, you know, Israel's denying it, saying, "Oh, it was the Hamas." Okay, so that's what they say every single time. They're the boy who cried wolf. I don't, in this particular case, there's not enough evidence yet to know for sure that they're lying, except for every other time where they've been lying and proven so afterwards. And it doesn't really matter, and I'll tell you why it doesn't matter. This is not only the Flower Massacre happened, well, 112 people died, all those hundreds of people injured, etc. Similar situation, obviously. But there's been shootings by the IDF at places where Palestinians were getting humanitarian relief 22 times. So don't tell me, oh, I didn't do the 23rd one. I did 22 others. Killed 8 that time, I killed 12 that time, I killed 112 the other time. Why are you shooting at people desperately trying to get food who are starving? Why are you shooting at them from drones? Why are you shooting at them from tanks? So it doesn't matter at all. Israel is 100% responsible in these situations. You know why we wouldn't have had anybody die in that situation if it wasn't for Israel? Because they wouldn't have been starving in the first place, and they wouldn't have had to go and desperately try to get food for their family. So look, once you see the CNN video that we've now shown you a couple of times of the babies that are and the children that are starving to death, and they look like Holocaust victims, they look exactly like them. And nothing else matters. If you right now, the Israeli cabinet is starving over 500,000 people to death. There is no excuse for that under any circumstances. There's no defense of it. There's no nothing of it. If you and for God's sake, if you're a good person, don't defend it, because it makes you look awful, like you have no heart at all. And you just think that those are what, cattle, dogs, I don't know. I mean, honestly, if Israel was doing this to dogs, America would have already revolted and we would not be sending them money. Let's be honest, and it's heartbreaking. It's absolutely heartbreaking. But if you saw dogs starving, if the American people saw dogs starving like that and then slaughtered every once in a while, IDF just opens fire and murders 112 dogs, America would have pulled its funding. You know it. You know it. If we had video of it, you know we would have pulled the funding. But they're Palestinians. So look, Israel has utterly, utterly destroyed its reputation in the world. It is now loathed by universally. What a terrible, disastrous strategy. I know, look, I can't speak to people who support the right-wing government of Israel rationally anymore. They've lost complete touch with reality. And they're out in outer space going, oh, we got this. We've almost won. This is winning? Where everybody in the world thinks you're monsters now? Okay, so those folks, they're never gonna care about Palestinians. They don't care. They don't care that they're being slaughtered and starved and all that stuff. So I can't talk to them about Palestinians because they don't emotionally connect about them. So let me talk about Israel. Under what scenario does this help Israel? You get like the supporters of Netanyahu and this right-wing government, you've lost your minds. You're absolutely deranged. This is the worst thing that could possibly happen to Israel. Hamas couldn't destroy Israel. They wouldn't even have a chance. The worst they could do was October 7th, and it was brutal and terrible. But at that point, Israel had all the world's sympathy and empathy. But Netanyahu has managed to destroy the reputation and the standing of Israel in the world. So for those of you who are still deranged and can't see straight, as a friend and ally, I'm telling you right now, you have to turn around. You have to turn around right now. I don't know if Israel can ever recover from this, but if you're gonna recover, you gotta turn around now. What happens if, you know, that just yesterday, 21 children starved to death? What happens if 158,000 people starve to death? Are you guys crazy? Have you lost your goddamn minds? Not only are you doing this to the Palestinians, you've totally destroyed what anyone thinks of Israel. Good luck trying to get anybody to think anything positively about Israel now. What are you gonna get, tourism? Oh, come see us starve children to death. Are you insane? What are you doing? What are you doing? But I'm deeply concerned, and I don't care what anybody says. I'm gonna tell you the truth. I'm deeply concerned for my Jewish friends. Because what do you think people are gonna think, you idiots? You idiots. What do you think people are going to think? Do you have any idea the amount of anti-Semitic tropes that exist in the world? Number one being, forget them. I don't even want to list them. I don't want to list them. And now here comes this monstrous moron, Netanyahu, who's like, hey, I'll give these guys fodder. Here, watch me kill kids. Oh, what are you doing? What are you doing? You're going to get people killed all across the world, you idiot. If you can't see that Israel has to turn around this goddamn second, you've lost your mind. Period. Mondo.
Yeah, I mean, it's a short list of days in my life that I've ever agreed with the South African government. But when they say we need to be bringing up human violations, human rights violations against Israel, I'm right in line with that. When are we going to put IDF in the same place we put those responsible for the genocide in Rwanda? Because what's happened in Gaza is nearing those numbers. When you talk about 500,000 people at threat of being starving to death, those numbers will trump what happened in Rwanda. So I am amazed at how quick the Western world was to call out that African nation for all of the horrors that it did to those people, but are silent while Benjamin Netanyahu's government is doing the exact same thing on everybody's TV. Because we have way more technology and we're seeing it. You cannot deny the fact that those kids' bones are showing that Jenkins is talking about. We saw those 7-year-olds, those 3-year-olds. The list of babies that have been murdered under the age of 2 will take you more than an hour just to say their name. Jeez. This is not a game. That what is happening, that government in Israel right now is a terrorist organization. And not naming them as that is all of us doing a disservice to everybody who's already died and will continue to die as they try to get food to prevent them and their children from dying.
I think we should probably take a break. There is more to come after this, though.
TYT, Cenk, John, and Mondale with you guys. EC just joined, and Vicky R gifted a membership on YouTube. You guys are amazing. Love you, John.
Okay, not me though. We're gonna go now to Bernie Sanders.
Can I talk to you about the 32-hour work week?
Yeah.
It seems like Fox Business. Yeah. It seems like Democrats want businesses to be taxed more, pay their
really?
Workers.
Really? Is that what you think?
pay their workers.
Excuse me.
I didn't get to ask a question.
Okay, thank you.
Senator,
you want to hold it? Okay.
So that is obviously a testy exchange between Senator Bernie Sanders and Hillary Vaughn of Fox Business, who swears that she's gonna get to the question after she rattles off her list of talking points against Bernie Sanders, who, as you probably are aware, earlier this week put forward legislation to establish a 32-hour work week with no loss of pay, effectively trying to improve the standard of living, the lives of working people. We're gonna give him a chance to provide a little bit more detail on that.
Senator,
you want to hold it? Okay. We held a hearing on a 32-hour work week because what we have seen is that over the last 50 years, despite a huge increase in worker productivity, almost all of the new wealth has gone to the top 1%, while 60% of the people are living paycheck to paycheck. Many of our people are exhausted. We work the longest hours of any people in the industrialized world. I think it's time for a shortened work week.
Can I ask you a question about that? It seems like Democrats want businesses to be taxed more, pay their workers more, lower prices, and now pay people not to work.
You know what I would like to see?
How are businesses going to survive that? That's the question. How can businesses survive all of those proposals?
When Mr. Bezos pays an effective tax rate lower than the average worker, I think we have a real problem in our tax system. I think that billionaires have got to stop paying their fair share of taxes. Thank you.
And I have to say, I think that was Bernie Sanders being kind of rude. She had a bullet point list of talking points that she needed to desperately read. And how is she supposed to advance a Fox Business if she doesn't read the talking points the billionaires want to hear? All he's calling for is a slightly shorter work week to be phased in over the course of 4 years and effectively establish a new baseline wherein if you work more than that, you'll receive overtime pay. And that is obviously radical and it can't be borne. I want to remind everyone that the 40-hour work week that most people have access to right now was the product of literally decades of labor organizing and was enshrined in federal law back in 1940, which was damn near a century ago. And I guess it can never get better. 100 years of, as Bernie Sanders points out, productivity gains almost every single year, creating an economy that is the wonder of the world, that has produced untold wealth, the work of regular people that has created the millionaires and the billionaires that we have in America. 1940, it was 40 hours, and it cannot be 39 hours in 2024. If you even hold a hearing, if you even debate the possibility, you're gonna be ambushed in the hallway by reporters sent there to advance the interests of the wealthiest people in the country, perhaps in the world. Cenk, what do you think?
Yeah, so okay, buckle up because I partly disagree. It's gonna get interesting. Okay, so, but my opinion here is quite nuanced. So number one, I kind of love what Bernie did. Not just because I like curmudgeons, but I do. I agreed with everything he said, minus the 32-hour work week. But I thought the funniest part was the reporter, which he was like corporate media personified. Like boil down all of corporate media into a human being and then send him as a robot to talk to Bernie Sanders. Why are you hurting the poor businesses? Businesses cannot get a break in America. Okay, the average man is so rich, but the billionaires are so poor. What? Okay, so all the things that Bernie listed off are absolutely right. The billionaires don't pay their taxes, they do loopholes, deregulation, productivity is sky high, wages haven't kept up. So I just have a different fix. I think that number one thing you gotta do is end corporate rule, and the way you do that is take money out of politics. And then you could get into wonderful debates about what we should do to fix the current system. I think higher minimum wage, which then pushes up other wages, obviously universal health care. There's 1,000 things I would do. And John is right about the role of unions. I remember, you know, I've seen the bumper sticker, which I think actually my original co-founder Ben Mankiewicz's dad, Frank Mankiewicz, might have come up with, which is if you like the weekends, thank the unions, because they're the ones who got you the weekends. And all of that is true. I just think that 32-hour work week is my least favorite of all of those proposals, partly because I don't really agree with it, and we could have that debate. And yes, if you don't know, I also run this company, so that comes from management. So you take it with a giant grain of salt, okay? But that is my real opinion. But also because I don't think it's great optics. So I think we have 100 issues on this topic, you know, within it, right? The minimum wage and all the others, where we have enormous popularity, where the American people agree with us 67%, 70%, 84%, on and on and on. I bet 32-hour work week does not poll well. So it's leaning in the wrong direction in terms of both, in my opinion, policy and politics. But let's get other opinions. Mario, what do you think?
Yeah, I think John, I agree more with John than you on this one, Jane. And let me tell you why. So John talked about almost 100 years, and actually it's closer than what you said, John, if you consider the fact that 1926, Henry Ford actually introduced the 40-hour work week, not based on science, just on the fact that the 48-hour work week didn't really produce any much productivity from his workers. So he cut their hours back to 40 hours without cutting their pay in 1926. And he saw productivity go up, and he helped eliminate burnout from his workers. So I think the idea that, you know, this notion that we need to be working people 40 hours a week is based on nothing. And we have too much science, too much tools, too much technology that can measure things to base anything that affects all of us, especially our working age people, on something that's as old as 1926. Mm-hmm. I will also go and say that what I can't stand is Republicans talking about how much billionaires pay in taxes. Let's be clear. America's 400 wealthiest billionaire families pay 8% in taxes, where the average family is paying about 12%. So you have the richest people paying a lot less amount of their resources than the people who need it, people that are living paycheck to paycheck. So it's absolutely not just disingenuous for Fox to be making this, Fox Business to be making this argument. It's absolutely pretty damn disgusting if you ask me. Furthermore, if we're going to keep people at 40 hours a week, can we lower, can we minimize that wage gap between those at the top and those actually producing something? We have more workers than we've ever had, and we need the least amount of workers than we've ever needed. And tomorrow we'll need less workers because of technology. So are we saying we're comfortable with people starving or not having enough to basically survive? Or are we going to get serious about the universal basic income?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would just argue for higher wages and higher benefits as opposed to lower hours. Like if you gave me an option, and I bet if you gave the average guy or average family an option of, hey, you work a day less or you make a lot more, I bet they go with a lot more. Don't get me wrong, guys, I get it. Working 4 days a week sounds like a dream. And if we can get society to that point where we could pull it off, fantastic.
Yeah.
And I get it that some of you think that maybe we're there yet, but there's so many things to fix.
Look, if this was the only thing that Bernie Sanders was advocating for, I'd probably disagree with it too. Of course, for Bernie Sanders, it's not. I think a lot of people, the American worker has been trained by the media for decades and decades and decades to be incredibly suspicious towards and hostile towards anyone advocating for their interests. They have been trained to think that that's a damn commie, basically. And so I don't doubt that right now a lot of people would find it to be impossible, but it's not impossible. I mean, many countries have this. Many experiments have been run in different countries and in this country. And he has the stats on the number of corporations that have instituted 4 day work weeks. And then after the trial period ends, they continue it because productivity is improved. Workers are more happy. There's less retention. It doesn't have to be a dream. We may have to educate people for a few years, for a decade, but I think that we should probably start that at some point. And look, I want people to be paid more and have better benefits too. But also, I think that if all of this technology is supposed to have achieved anything, can it not at some point let people live a little bit more? Like, I have a daughter now. I'd like to spend some time with her. Like, I want people to be able to go out into nature, to read a book, to spend time with their family, to reinvigorate friendships. Work isn't just supposed to be about toil. Like, I'm lucky enough that I have a job that I love. Most people don't have that benefit. But regardless of which side of that line you fall on, like, life isn't just supposed to be about generating wealth. You're supposed to be able to enjoy it. And 2 days is something. I'm glad that we have that weekend, but never three? We literally have AI models now that are replacing people's jobs. And those at the top are anticipating far more to be replaced. And it just seems ironic that with all that advanced technology, the only diminution in your hours you can get is when your job's entirely eliminated and replaced with a robot. So you can go from 40 to zero, but you can't go from 40 to 38. It just seems weird to me.
But listen, I'm over here smiling, guys, and I don't know if y'all can see it because y'all in the studio, but I'm laughing because not at what you're saying, John, because it's absolutely factual. It's just that you and Jink right now sound like the CNN interview, I mean the Don Lemon interview with Elon Musk. So don't lose your job.
Don't fire me. Don't fire me.
Afterwards, I send a text. Contract terminated.
Oh my god. Anyway, yes. And by the way, thank you for making me feel confident enough to have this script. You got the same day. And I like doing my job. I'm not asking for a full day off. Maybe a half day on Fridays would be nice, you know. But anyway, search on TDR's YouTube channel. I've done many videos about the 4 day work week. If you want more of my thoughts on that. That said, there is other big news bearing on the election. One of the kingmakers on the Republican side, a tastemaker, if you will, has weighed in on the presidential endorsement. Let's go to this.
Let me ask you this. We have not spoken since former President Trump sewed up the nomination, which he did earlier this week. And he has received endorsements from some of the people who were running against him. But we have not heard from you. Will you be endorsing your former president? You were on the ticket with him last time around.
Well, Martha, I appreciate the question. And it should come as no surprise that I will not be endorsing Donald Trump this year.
Okay, good response, strong response. Equally strong response would have been, Martha, he sent a mob to kill me. But anyway, we're glossing over that. I know it's uncouth to point out that he sent a chanting mob to hang you. But anyway, look, regardless, that is Mike Pence. willing to admit that he's not going to endorse Donald Trump. It would have been far easier for him to just go along with it. The vast majority of Republicans, whether they like Trump or not, they all pretend to. And they all say that they're going to support Donald Trump. But that's true for many of the politicians. It's true for people like Tucker Carlson. Most of them don't have the balls necessary to admit that they don't like this guy and they think he's an agent of chaos. But Mike Pence eventually, perhaps too late, came to that position, and now he's saying that he's not going to endorse him. And I also want to just give you a little bit of his argumentation as to why, because it's actually multifaceted.
During my presidential campaign, I made it clear that there were profound differences between me and President Trump on a range of issues. And not just our difference on my constitutional duties that I exercised on January the 6th. I mean, as I have watched his candidacy unfold, I've seen him walking away from our commitment to confronting the national debt. I've seen him starting to shy away from a commitment to the sanctity of human life. And this last week is his reversal on getting tough on China and supporting our administration's effort to force a sale of ByteDance TikTok. In each of these cases, Donald Trump is pursuing and articulating an agenda that is at odds with the conservative agenda that we governed on during our 4 years. And that's why I cannot in good conscience endorse Donald Trump in this campaign.
Okay, so in addition to that, he says he's going to keep his vote private, but not totally private. He's not going to vote for Biden. So I guess the options are he's not going to endorse Trump, but he's still going to vote for him, or RFK Jr. I mean, he doesn't strike me as a Cornel West kind of guy. So I'm not sure if it's as private as he's pretending it's going to be. But what do you think?
Yeah, I get it. You want to vote for Jill Stein, you just don't want to say it. Not a big deal. Okay, no, I'm going to say something a little controversial. I think that Mike Pence is probably going to go down in the history books as an American hero. So now Mike Pence is, okay, get ready, buckle up, brace for impact, okay? Yeah, you don't have to tell me that Mike Pence is an otherwise terrible guy. Of course he is, right? He wants to take away women's freedom. He's a Christian fundamentalist, doesn't believe really in a secular government or our constitution in that regard. And I can go on and on with all the things that I have said about Mike Pence and I believe about Mike Pence that are all negative, okay? Except that if he had actually gone along with Donald Trump's plot on January 6th, they might have pulled it off. Because remember, it's not about the riot, it's about the fake electors. And if Pence had delayed the proceedings, it would have gone back to the states, they would have launched the fake electors, and the Republicans would have realized we just vote according to states in the House, and we could just take this thing. And they could have. And Mike Pence didn't let them. And he protected America in that moment. So that, to me, outweighs everything else he's ever done in his life. And here, I say today because it takes some courage to do what he did today too. Because as you see the Tim Scotts of the world, and we're gonna get to him later in the show, I mean, kissing up to Donald Trump in the most pathetic, groveling ways and just debasing themselves, right? Here's a guy who we don't agree with at all on anything else, who at least has the backbone to say, no, I don't care if he's going up against Joe Biden, I don't care if every other Republican is going to hate me for it. I am not going to endorse Donald Trump. And I tip of the hat. I respect that. And look, I think for me, it would have been easy and a no-brainer. The guy tried to get you murdered. And if you don't know, not only did they chant, hang Mike Pence, as they were going into the Capitol, which we played for you many times. But on top of that, witnesses say Mark Meadows went into Donald Trump's office on that day to deliver the message that his supporters were looking to murder Mike Pence. And Trump said he had it coming. Okay, so you can say, hey, Cenk, your bar is too low. If when someone says they didn't mind you being murdered by their supporters, yeah, I don't think you should endorse them. But if you're a Republican politician, that is a very high bar, because all they ever do is grovel and kiss Donald Trump's ass. So the fact that Mike Pence, who was his vice president, didn't do that at a critical time, again, is a great credit to him. All right, Mondale, what do you think?
I think, you know, when you say Mike Pence is going to be remembered as an American hero, all I can remember in my head are the names of Confederate generals. Stonewall Jackson, Robert E. Lee, Braxton Bragg, and Mike Pence. He's going to be a hero to that segment of America. Ain't no way in hell he's an American hero. Nobody's going to remember that. And I'm going to tell you why. This is not an American politician. This is not a Republican politician. He wasn't this courageous on the campaign trail. He recognized the tea leaves. He's done. His political career is over. There's no more campaigns for Mike Pence at all. So right now he's trying to carve out a space where he can look like he has some type of decency after this Trump movement is over. This is not a politician. This is someone who was weak as a politician a few months ago, not strong enough to condemn Trump and this voice until where he see that he has no opportunity. I see him just like I see the rest of the Republicans that stand beside Trump when he's said and done crazy things about this country that they're supposed to love and also the people that they love, like Ted Cruz, who Trump called their wife ugly, yet and still, he's still out here carrying Trump's water. What Trump said about John McCain and supposedly John McCain's best friend, he who would not be named, Voldemort from South Carolina, still carrying Trump water. So I just don't see hero in Mike Pence. I see someone looking for a squirrely way out of what he found himself in, which is, I won't say it.
Okay, so I love this show. I love that we now disagreed on 3 out of the 4 stories or so. And there's nothing wrong with that. We have conversations, etc. And I want to say that Mondale made a great point about the timing of this statement. He's right. Mike Pence's political career is over. Mike Pence didn't say this earlier when he had every opportunity to say it. He's saying it now because he realizes he's not getting back in the Trump administration. Trump has won. He's taken over the RNC. He's won the Republican Party. So all Mike Pence has left is, you know, some sort of corporate gig. And so this is probably a decent transition to it. And I don't want anybody to misunderstand what I'm saying. He's not an American hero for saying this today, but for what he did on January 6th in not going along with the coup plot. And again, you could say, hey, low bar, he didn't participate in a coup. But he was a critical, critical person that prevented the coup. And I'll add one last positive note about Mike Pence, which is that the Secret Service came to him and said, we got to get you out of the building because they're coming for you specifically. And he said, no, I will not leave until I certify this election. So I stick by it. I think they're going to look at him as pretty heroic on that day. Okay. All right. We are massively out of time. We got to go. Mondale, everybody check him out on Rebel Headquarters. You're awesome, brother. And John's, of course, host of Damage Report. Check him out there. We'll be right back.